Radio City again. Here we are, 85 strong. John Grayson and Rob Ross here hanging out with you, and welcome back. And we appreciate everybody who listens into us on a weekly basis here on The Dose and wherever you happen to catch us. Rob, how's everything going?
Not bad. A few aches and pains aside, today was the first day that we actually had a normal autumn day. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Started gray and crappy. They said it was going to rain and it was going to be cold because it plunged from like 100% humidity yesterday, which was vile. But by about, I'd say 9:30, 9:45, the sun was out. It was cool and comfortable. You didn't need a jacket. Just glorious.
Yeah.
Really glorious.
Well, St. Louis hasn't been bad either. It's been the same kind of gray and crappy. But the nice thing about it is that after the rain went away, we were left with temperatures in anywhere between lows in the 40s and highs in the upper 60s or low 70s. But after being in the 90s earlier this week, it was a nice reprieve.
Oh, yeah. There's something else that makes New York even more wonderful this week. The Yankees lost.
Yes. The Yankees are out of the Major League Baseball playoffs. And on we go with, boy, who's left? I guess on the American League side now, we've got to decide between, what is it going to be, Houston?
And Boston.
And Boston, right. And then on the National League side, who knows?
We've got the Dodgers playing Milwaukee right now. And when I was watching a snippet of the game, Gio Gonzalez of the Brewers retired the Dodgers 1-2-3 in the top of the first, but meanwhile, the Brewers were making Clayton Kershaw work. Did something like 15 pitches in just on the first batter.
Wow.
That he faced after giving up an initial base hit. So let's hope that the Dodgers are dispensed. I hope the Brewers will pull a very nasty, ugly surprise on the Dodgers, because I think I've grown to hate the Dodgers even more than I despise the Yankees.
Can you imagine seeing Milwaukee take on the Astros in a World Series? That just, you know, that makes me happy.
Well, for me, the reason I'd like to see the Brewers in there is because all I think of is the Seattle Pilots.
Right, right.
That's it in a nutshell. If the Red Sox win the whole thing, I'm fine, as long as it's not the Dodgers.
I'm with you. I will not argue even a little bit. So, yeah, life is good. But like you said, the Yankees are out, and Hal Steinbrenner will have to wait another year for his team to do absolutely anything.
Oh, wait, John, newsflash. Two other things in New York. The Giants lost again on Thursday night
football. To Philly, yeah, right.
1-5. I mean, even the Jets are 2-3.
Right, and Odell Beckham Jr. is losing his mind.
Well, he never had one to begin with. So.
Yeah, it all seeped out through the bleach at the end of his hair. But
stop the presses. The Rangers won a game last night, the first game of the season, at home, in overtime.
Was Lundqvist sick or something?
No, he got the first star of the game. He gave up 2 goals. They had to come back, tie it late in the third, and then they actually won it in overtime on their first possession, 33 seconds into overtime. So they beat the San Jose Sharks. I am absolutely shocked by this. It's not going to last, but hey, they won a game finally. So now they're 3.
Yeah, and you know, the Bills last week pulled off another victory that they weren't supposed to. The Tennessee Titans came into Orchard Park and left with a 1-point loss. And I mean, it was a miserable game, but I think what we're seeing out of this team more and more is that the defense, you know what it does is it reminds me of 1988. Where the team was trying to find itself. They had a quarterback who had been around for one season. And actually, it's better to go back to 1987 because the defense was incredible that year. And all the way through the Super Bowl years, you had guys like Bruce Smith and Cornelius Bennett, Leon Seals and Shane Conlon and all the rest of them. So now you've got this incredible defense. They're forcing fumbles like crazy. And they're essentially setting the team up to be able to win games, which is what they need right now. So who knows? Maybe a couple of years down the road, this team can make some noise if they can hold any of the players together.
The Buffalo Bills and the Houston Oilers, huh?
That's right.
Good old AFL game, huh?
Yeah, like the greatest.
God intended it.
Yeah, they're like the greatest comeback in NFL history when we came back from 32 points down.
Wait a minute. Who did the Jets play last week when we won? Oh, it was the Denver Broncos. AFL game.
Right, right.
By the way, we got Major League kudos for episode number 84. Mr. Rob Shapiro, the glorious mind behind Populux, would like to send his much vaunted thanks for the kind things that we've said, et cetera, et cetera. All I want to do is point out the fact that we just spoke the truth.
Right.
Yeah. It's all
they made it really easy on us. They made a great album. So, yeah, we didn't have much work to do.
So, Rob, if you're listening to this episode, I'm telling you, I speak no lies. Neither does John, because we're Jews. You know, and you understand that concept, I'm sure. So therefore, just go with it. It's a great album.
Yep.
Be proud. Tell people. Sell it.
And it's there for you. And if you missed 84, go back and listen to it, because that segment was full of not only Robin and me waxing poetic about the album, but a bunch of the music from it as well. You get sound clips from all over the place on Populux's new one called Lumiere.
If you missed 84, I'll find you.
Yeah, I
know where you live.
And we have a whole bunch more to go over this time around. It has been... You know, it's becoming redundant to say it's been a crazy week, but it's been a crazy week. And this week is a short one for you and me. So much has happened over the last little while. Let's start with Hurricane Michael, because it came out of nowhere, seemingly, and slammed into the what is called the Big Bend area in Florida, which is anywhere between like Gainesville and Tallahassee, or Gainesville and Panama City. It really is where the mainland Florida becomes the panhandle. And it did an incredible amount of damage. There's one town called Mexico Beach, which is, I mean, if there's one home in four still standing along the beach there, it's a lot. And we knew, I mean, when they said that it was going to hit, that it was going to make landfall as a strong category four. And I think when it made landfall, the winds near the eye were 3 or 4 miles an hour short of a category five. It was almost Andrew. And it just happened to hit an area that was a lot less populated than Andrew did when it hit the Miami area and Homestead. But still, the damage that was done there is going to take years to clean up. And on the very instant that it was making landfall and making its way through the Florida Panhandle in southern Georgia, there was another hurricane going on in the Oval Office when Kanye West showed up and called himself a crazy motherfucker in front of Donald Trump and the rest of the world.
Where do I even begin? I am sure anything I say approaching my absolute hatred, disdain, contempt, and loathing for Kanye West will easily be misconstrued as racist, probably. But the fact is that this guy is possibly a bigger dick than Donald Trump is. Again, if that's possible.
Right.
And I think it is possible, because if nothing else, oh, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think you might even agree with me on this one. At least Donald Trump is president of the United States. Kanye West is just an irritating douchebag.
Yeah. He's a total know-nothing, and that's the part about it that I find the most hateful, is that you've got two total know-nothings sitting across the table from each other and trying to make sense, and it just, it's so unfathomable that entire episode unfolded as it did. And I think, you know, what Kanye West did, if you look at what he actually said, forget the fact that he's wearing the MAGA hat and all the other ancillary crap that went on, but if you look at what he actually said, it's nothing. It is vapor. There's no sense to it whatsoever. He has no ideas. All he wants to do is sit there and spout stupid sounding words in front of the camera and get more people to look at him. So I guess in his case, mission accomplished.
Do you remember, even though I wasn't a big fan of the show, In Living Color did this kind of recurring sketch where it was this character in a jail cell who would meander on verbally.
Yes.
Big words that had absolutely no consistency with the sentence he was trying to spew forth.
Exactly. Precisely.
Kanye West has never done a single solitary thing of merit or note, period. There's nothing creative, enriching, intelligent. He's a zero. He has no value, no redeeming value to society on any level, along with his wife. Therefore, the two of them can easily be dispensed with. And let me just say right now, you know, since we are getting to the election cycle, you know, and I'm starting to ramp things up a little more from my run for dictator, I promise you, as your malevolent dictator, they will be the first two taken out and eliminated for the good of the race, meaning the human race,
yeah.
Because we just don't need them.
Well, yeah, we don't need them. And I mean, it's a little more malignant than that, because somebody like Kanye West does get attention, and you know, you can't take, there is a value in that, I guess. if he chooses to use it in a way that's valuable. But I mean, while that, what do you call it? Was it a press conference? Whatever it was, while it was happening, sideshow, I think is probably a better description.
I think that's perfect. Actually, it was just a shit show.
Yeah.
Really.
At the bottom of the screen, it said Kanye West, musician. Really? What does he play?
With himself. That's it.
Musician, my ass.
That guy is just, he serves no purpose. And the whole point, and you bring up a very salient point, you know, he gains attention, but he chooses not to use it wisely because he can't. He's incapable.
Right.
He's a moron. You know, no wonder why he's a kindred spirit with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a moron.
Yeah, well,
Donald Trump has had longevity. Kanye West, for all intents and purposes, will be like so many others of his ilk and of this particular time and place in history as maybe, and I'm being generous here, an asterisk.
Right. Yeah, what has he done that has any value? And, you know, you can say, well, look at all the records. Okay, tell me the indelible song from Kanye West.
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, it might as well be.
I can say to you, John, honest to God, I have no idea what that guy has done musically, and I'm using the term musically in quotation marks. I am proud to beg ignorance in the fact that I know nothing of what is contemporary popular music, and it's the truth. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the best I can offer you is the fact that the last group I genuinely got excited about for the long haul is already over a decade and then some, and that was the Kaiser Chiefs.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, Kanye aside, and Kanye should be aside, as far aside as we can get him, what he does is he takes air away and he takes the oxygen in the room away from people who actually have something to say, who have meaningful ideas. And again, all of this was going on, and the two of them were yucking it up in the Oval Office while people were being killed by a hurricane. And I mean, forget about Puerto Rico for just a minute and all the hell they've gone through over the last couple of years. Florida is being destroyed by this thing. And the two of them are just having a good old laugh at the in the Oval Office watching Kanye West be a buffoon. You know, I hate this argument. Bear with me for just a second, because I hate it when people do this 99% of the time. But I can't not go down that road. Where the fuck is Fox News right now?
Where are they?
You know, they were, Obama always looks for a TV camera to step in front of, and Obama's always got these celebrities at the White House, and Obama invited Common. Remember that? And the conniption fit that those white assholes at Fox News threw over that bullshit? And what happens now? This, with Kanye West in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, goes down, and Fox News is nowhere. Nowhere.
And Kanye West is, in fact, a genuine asshole.
Right.
Just like the president.
Right. Right. I mean, show a little consistency. It just, God, that drives me crazy.
Come on. You know damn well that's asking for the world.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you're asking for fair and balance. Like, that's just not going to happen.
I know. But still.
Trump managed to sign a bill that, on the surface, and I'm going to use the words on the surface, that will eventually help musicians and songwriters to finally get paid.
Yep. Right. From all of the streaming that they've been getting shafted on like crazy. One of the leaders in this on the musician side, and he is a true musician, is David Lowery from Cracker. He's been fighting this fight and sounding the gong on Pandora and all of the rest of the streaming platforms for the better part of a decade now. And finally, it's starting to show some results.
Well, I will say this much, whether anyone realizes it or not, if that is the truth and that he did indeed sign that bill for that purpose, he did something very good.
Yep.
Very seriously good, because we're talking about how long has streaming been going on and musicians not seeing a single penny. Now, Mr. Lowery of Cracker/Camper Van Beethoven, I've read several of the articles that he has written and published over the years, and I cannot believe that there are so many people in music, fellow musicians, of the same ilk, of the same, I don't want to say legendary status, but yeah, legendary status, who buck against his, not argument, but his point.
Right.
Because his point is solid and valid. I don't understand that. You're cutting your own throat if you're against the idea.
Yeah. And the great thing about David is, and he's quick to point out in a lot of those articles, that he's not really suffering from this. I mean, it is taking money out of his pocket as a performer, but he writes all of his own stuff. So most of the royalties he gets are as a composer, and those are paid, and those are paid fairly well. But, you know, for a song like Low, I think there was one month where with a million or something streams like that, it ended up netting him $30 as a musician. There's something wrong with that when it's getting that many listens and nobody's making any money off of it.
I wonder if this is going to have any kind of repercussive effect on satellite radio play, because even though satellite radio has diminished greatly, I think, unfortunately. You know, there has to be some kind of domino effect.
Right. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but my big beef with satellite radio is less about the royalties they pay, because they actually do fairly well by a lot of the musicians. And it's more about the fact that they take anything that's not a top 10 channel and compress it down to the point where the music is almost unlistenable.
Is it your area, maybe?
No, it's the stations, because I listen to a lot of really off the beaten path stations on Sirius XM, and they're compressed and they sound crappy. If I listen to the same song off of an MP, even an MP3, which are only marginal at best, off of my iPhone, it sounds 100 times better than it does on Sirius.
Interesting. See, again, ever since that merger, it went downhill, because when it was XM, the content was so much better and broader, and Sirius just fucked it all up royally.
Exactly.
Really
good. Now, we do have some great news to talk about, and we've been covering consumerism for these last couple of months. There's a couple of moves that have been made just lately, and we talked last week about the fact that the Toys R Us brand had sold itself off and was probably going to make a resurgence sometime within the next couple of years. There's a company that's making some noises about bringing that back and having brick and mortar Toys R Us stores again. It'll be a totally different company doing it, but at least it'll look the same and it'll have the same name. But they're not the only ones in the toy business that are coming back. Who else?
FAO Schwarz.
That is huge.
You know, FAO Schwarz was bought out by Toys R Us years ago, but yes, FAO Schwarz, who was the first one to go under and close their stores, have in fact signed a lease and are moving to Times Square and will reopen.
That's fantastic.
So yes, there is hope. There is genuine hope. But the fact that FAO Schwarz, who is the original, really, if you think about it, of the toy stores and Toys R Us to make a comeback in the span of a week from one another, that's wonderful news for especially for people who possibly can have jobs now.
Yes.
You know? Anytime people will be able to go to work, whatever scale it is, you know, let's keep it in perspective now. You know, people who need to work can find jobs. They can get a job at Toys R Us or at FAO Schwarz. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. It really is. It's important, because that says, I hate to say it, that jobs are coming back.
Right.
And we need to have jobs coming back, whether it's a store or, you know, what have you. Now, we talked on the last show, and I have a feeling this is going to be an ongoing thing with us, because it's becoming more and more prevalent on a weekly basis of what we hear reports-wise, as far as you know, corporations filing for bankruptcy and so on and so forth. But we did talk about Mattress Firm filing for Chapter 11 protection.
Right.
They're now blaming Casper. Now, if you're not familiar with Casper, certainly in the New York area, Casper is a mattress company who sell online as well as having their boutiques. But they also have these places where, and I think this is an absolutely brilliant idea actually, if you want to go and take a quick nap somewhere, you just make a little appointment. It's like getting a table reservation, you know, online. You go in and you try and find the nearest Casper location to you. You go in and it's like a mini spa, and you can have a nap, and they have, you know, physical refreshers, you know, just high-end stuff. And it's a really great idea, and people are taking to it. And I understand why, you know?
That is a fantastic – I love New York. I mean, because that's not ever going to happen in St. Louis, okay? It doesn't matter. It's never going to happen here. That only happens there.
Hang on. Before we start, you know, touting the praises of the homeland, New York sucks, okay? Because I got one word for you, brother, because you're a New Yorker and you know. Tourists.
Well, yeah.
They just come here and fuck everything up for everybody.
Which is funny because that's the one thing St. Louis is trying to do more than anything else, is trying to attract tourists. And I keep telling them, you don't want those people.
You can have ours. I don't need these dipshits getting off the ferry with their mouths open, these mouth-breathing retards, stinking of marijuana. And these are fucking tourists, okay? Walking in the perimeter where the ferry is, there's barely any sidewalk room to begin with because of the construction that's ongoing for the outlet mall. And these dipshits just looking around with their goddamn tour groups, not knowing what to do or where to go, and then being belligerent when people want to pass them by.
Right.
Because we want to go home, or we want to catch our buses, or what have you.
Well, you know what part of that is? Is they've heard so much about, oh, rude New Yorkers, and you're supposed to be rude to them back. It's like, it's not a diner, kids. These are people who live there.
Well, I told you, and this was not a joke, and I'm happy to repeat my contentious story of, I was on the ferry, and this one asshole asked someone, so do people live on Staten Island? Well, first of all, fuck nuts. If you looked around, it was a packed ferry with people going home.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of the giveaway right there, you mongoloid. But anyway, I digress. So, you know, you've got Casper that's doing this really – it's a brilliant idea. I think it's inventive and it's clever and really forward-thinking. But Mattress Firm wants to lay the blame with somebody else rather than admit the fact that they oversaturated the market by not having competition after they took over Sleepy's, you know?
Right.
And, of course, Sears is allegedly, but it keeps – this thing's been going on for how long now? But Sears is allegedly days away from bankruptcy. So we don't know how long they've really got left.
Well, and I think most people would say, all right. I mean, I don't remember the last time I was in a Sears to really buy anything of any kind of value or note.
That makes two of us. And on another corporate front, and I'm not sure I like this at all because of what the ramifications may spell out, but CVS, the pharmacy mega chain, is now being merged with Aetna Healthcare.
Yeah, I don't like that. And I mean, there's 100 reasons why, but that's becoming more and more the model in business. And as far as mergers and acquisitions are concerned, they want every point along the chain to be under their corporate control. So if that chain happens to be you getting sick, well, they want to own the doctor's office. They want to own the insurance company that pays the doctor's office. They want to own the pharmacy. They want to own, you know, where you're going to go and fill the prescriptions after you go see the doctor they own. So yeah, I don't know. It bothers me. It bothers me deeply.
Yeah, it's very, very troubling because the world has talked about big pharma. Well, what do you call this?
Right. Right.
So that's
the other thing. Yeah, they'll need to own the pharmaceutical company too. So expect CVS and Aetna or whatever the company is called when they're finally done to start going after the Eli Lillys of the world or whoever else they can get a hold of.
Yeah, well, good luck to them. This is I'm really glad that we're at this age where we don't have that much time left.
<You know? laughs> Yeah, right. Well, apparently the planet doesn't either. What are we down to, 3 or 4 decades? Is that what they're saying now?
Well, we'll be gone at least 2 before it ends.
If we keep living like this, no doubt about it. But yeah, it's good to know that there is some good news going on alongside the bad news. But yeah, when it comes to something like Sears, it's not a model that works anymore. You know, it's funny.
It's antiquated. That's the only word I can think of.
There was something that came up on the air the other day, not on my show, but another show on our station, our morning show. And they were talking about S&H green stamps. Yeah, I know, right?
Wow.
Now, everybody had a mom who collected the stamps. And I remember the stamp books and licking those awful tasting things and sticking them because they came in those strips of 5. But sometimes you get a big sticker. If they had bought something really big, you'd get a 20 or a 50. So you could do a whole page with just one sticker. That's what we were always waiting for. But it was going to the green stamp store. You could order stuff out of their catalog, too, if I remember right. But the S&H green stamp stores, boy, the last time I saw one, I was probably 6.
I'll go you one better. Do you remember plaid stamps?
No.
Okay, plaid stamps and the equivalency store, Plaidland. Usually we would get those when we went to A&P. And they were definitely one of the green – they were the competition for SNH green stamps. We used to get SNH green stamps whenever we go to certain gas stations.
Yeah, you get them at gas stations, grocery stores, whatever. If you spent money, you'd get green stamps back.
And Plaidland was always fun if you were a kid, you know. That was always kind of cool. It was almost like a Christmas type of store because right. It was stuff you didn't see in everyday – you know, like you didn't see it in Corvettes. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it was always a little shinier. And I remember my mom got a backyard set from the green stamp store. It was just a little like card table and four little plastic chairs that sat around it. But that's what we got, you know?
I love those. I miss those days, you know? But of course, you're talking about a time when life was really infinitely easier. Just think, it was a time before ATM machines, long before cell phones, you know? When you knew that, okay, today is payday, so you got to meter out your money for the next week after you cashed your check.
And much like we've talked about before, you know, the days when you would call somebody on the phone, and if they weren't there, you had to wait for them to get there. You know, it's that same kind of deal because you couldn't shop. If you were going to go on a shopping trip, you had to plan that because you had to be there in plenty of time to get the shopping done before the store closed. Now they don't.
Yeah, I mean, you used to be able to do... You used to get a lot more achieved.
You had to, yeah.
Right, you had to manage your time wisely.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Now, if I want anything at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm in Waterloo, Illinois, I'm in this tiny little town in southern Illinois. If I want something at 3 o'clock in the morning, I can drive 10 minutes and get it.
I'm not so sure modern conveniences are all that convenient.
No. Well, what was the end of the opening poem on Jello Biafra's No More Cocoons when he said the convenience you have demanded is now mandatory?
Just remember one thing about Biafra. He buys used underwear.
At the Goodwill, right?
At the Salvation Army
That's
store.
That's right, Salvation Army, right. I love it when you do that.
Thank you. I do it just to entertain you. That's why. I will do it for no one mainly because... Biafra reminds me of so many awful times in life. So, you know. But let's talk about another musician because this week was John Lennon's birthday.
Yep.
And I know we've definitely discussed this on the show previously, but it did reach an apex of surrealistic idiocy with everybody going on and on and on the 9th about how, oh, if Lennon was here today and, you know, we need a voice like his, and oh, I'm sure he'd be at the forefront of the revolution. And how fucking immature and delusional are you people? First of all, if John Lennon were alive today, he'd be dead, okay? Because he'd have been 78, and he probably would have been dead by now.
Yeah, if you don't not, do that much heroin and live to 78.
Right. And or if he were alive today, I'm pretty sure that... The way it was going after Double Fantasy was released, that album was going to stiff. And there's no two ways about it. The criticisms were harsh, if not downright mocking, and justifiably so. He probably would have turned around and pulled the plug on any further attempt at, you know, resuming his musical career because he couldn't have taken the criticism. He might have gone for one more album and then bagged it completely. But the way that they have rewritten Lennon's character and his legend and the mythology is absolutely shameful. It's just this whole, going back to the word that we've used, I think, most frequently in this last year, infantilism, that has taken hold of people who tend to lean towards the left because it's all in a political forum. He was a musician, first and foremost. That's all he was. He was not a very nice guy, you know. You could make the argument that he was actually just a downright asshole. I think that would probably be a lot more accurate. Third of all, if he were alive today and listened to the way that you've canonized him, he would probably treat you with the biggest amount of contempt and disgust because
yes.
Even when people made a fuss over him when he was alive, he didn't like it. The one thing I will give him credit for is that he never took himself that seriously where, you know, when people would be like, oh, it's John Lennon of the Beatles, or it's, oh, it's John Lennon. He's like, fuck off. You know, and rightly so, because he was a shitty guy. And I think he knew it, and that's why. So yeah. He didn't let the myth that already had been perpetrated while he was alive, the myth created by the Beatles bubble, I don't think he would have accepted any of it. And I'm sure as shit positive now that if he were alive today, he would be filled with such contempt and loathing for everyone who has done this kind of thing.
Yeah, he'd probably be a recluse.
You know, he'd be nasty.
He would be Ron Nasty, that's right.
His wheelchair, you know, alone with his thoughts and memories.
Well, and that's really, I mean, this is going to sound bizarre to say, but for his legacy, that was probably the greatest gift that it got, was that he died at 40 years old. So people will always remember him at the most at 40 years old. Well, 40 is 8 years ago for me, you know, and I'm not about to go out there and light the world on fire. So it's fine, you know, but he wouldn't be in 2018 the same person that he was in 1973.
Right. I mean, you know, he had changed, but the thing is, at the end of the day, he was just a guy. He wasn't some kind of seer. He wasn't a holy man. And yet, the sick bastards that are out there now have elevated him to this, like I said, this canonized state of Saint Lennon. And it's angering as it's irritating as it's pathetic. And it's irresponsible, too.
Right.
You know?
But
it really is.
We love to do that, though. And, you know, I had a conversation last week. This one has not aired yet, but it will soon, with Giles Martin. And Giles Martin, of course, George Martin's son, and he's the one who did all of the re-engineering on all of the re-releases and the box sets and everything else that they've been doing to squeeze every dime they possibly can out of the Beatles while it's still at all saleable. And this time around, because it's the 50th anniversary, it's the White Album. It's getting the deluxe treatment, 7 CDs long, and there's a movie that goes along with it, and a book, and everything else. And we have also sort of canonized the White Album. And I'm not entirely sure why. There's a couple of really good songs on the White Album, and there's a lot that isn't.
We've spent the last 30-plus years trying to boil the White Album, a 2-LP set, down to a single good disc.
Right.
A coherent version, which I think I nailed one down. I'm not sure if you and I ever talked about it, but I think I did it pretty adeptly with what I think the song choices should have been as a single album, which in conception, it was supposed to be called The Doll's House, actually. We'll talk about this 50th anniversary thing, because that's another, you know, grind to my gears kind of moment. But if we had gone with a single version of the White Album, it's not even called the White Album. We're just stuck with that name because it's just titled The Beatles. Definitely the running order that it begins with, Back in the USSR, Dear Prudence, Glass Onion. I hate to say it. I would have put Obla Di Obla Da in there, but I would have put the version that wound up on Anthology 3. I think it's a much better, much livelier version. And it just sounds better, too.
Yeah, and that goes back to John Lennon, by the way, because he hated that song. Hated it.
Well, that first version was the keeper, not the one that made it to the album.
Yep.
While My Guitar Gently Weeps, Happiness is a Warm Gun. Okay, so that's the songs from side one. So obviously we're shaving off things like Wild Honey Pie and that stupid Bungalow Bill song.
Yep, all the stuff that's just blah, 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 blah.
Right, stupid stuff. From side two, and I'm not going in any particular order. If I've got the sides correct, Blackbird, I'm So Tired, I Will and Julia. Okay. From side three, Long, 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 obviously. Helter Skelter. Side four, Cry Baby Cry. And
isn't Mother Nature's Son in there somewhere too?
It's on that album. I just never liked it, oh, so okay. I wouldn't put it out there. And the same thing applies to Rocky Raccoon. I wouldn't put. I don't. I'm not. And Birthday. I would throw in and I put Birthday on there, and I'd close out the album with Good Night because Ringo has to have that one vocal, and I wouldn't want to do it with Don't Pass Me By. Yeah.
Which is funny because that's the one I think of all of the Ringo songs that didn't make an album until then, that was the one that he wrote the earliest. That song was already in the can for Ringo anyway, or it was written and ready to go in 1964.
Wow. Poor Ringo.
Yeah, I know. And they made that thing sit on the shelf.
I come in with some song and they'd be on the floor laughing, telling me what Jerry Lee Lewis song I'd rewritten.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? He wasn't the only one in that band that rewrote, you know, other people's music. So I don't know if they should give him so much shit for that.
Well, let's remember, it was always St. Lennon and St. McCartney. But at least, you know, at least Paulie Mac would do something a little bit less obvious than Lennon would. You know, at least Paul never got nailed for basically rewriting a Chuck Berry song verbatim.
Right.
Here come old Flat Top, he comes grooving up slowly.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Dick, did you ever bother to think for a moment before you opened your mouth with that lyric?
Nope.
Fool.
Yeah.
So, okay, so every goddamn album on the planet seems to always have an anniversary. Why? Why do we have to do this?
So that record companies can make more money off of old stuff.
I mean, okay, number one, a 50th anniversary version of the White Album. Just like we had a 50th anniversary of the most overrated album in history, Sgt. Pepper. Why was there no 50th anniversary edition of Rubber Soul, which was an important album, right, even yet? And I'm not even going to go any further than saying, why was there no 50th anniversary edition of Revolver?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, two albums that not only changed what music was at the time, what popular music was at the time, it changed what the band was about.
It also set a precedent for everybody in their wake to be able to take from and make their own. And these two albums, of all the Beatles records, let alone records in general, these two albums have stood the test of time very nicely.
Right.
They've aged beautifully. Pepper's a lump of shit. I'm sorry. I can name you the songs I like off of there. No messing around. I do like Little Help from My Friends because we played it. We had Chris, our drummer, singing it. It worked. I like Lucy in the Sky. I like Getting Better. I like, at moments, Lovely Rita, and I like Good Morning a lot, and that's it. Rest of the album can go, that's it. No more than that.
Yeah.
She's Leaving Home, I used to like. It's just too kitchen sink melodrama, you know. It's McCartney trying to outdo himself with Eleanor Rigby, but now you're trying too hard. You know, especially with the harps.
Yeah,
it makes it cloying.
Yeah, it's a little overwrought. There's no doubt about it, and everybody does. Everybody does get up and leave home eventually, so it's not like it's that big a deal. I'm with you. I just think when it comes to the anniversaries, we're in a time now where, okay, 1968 was 50 years ago. 1969 will be 50 years ago next year. These 3 years, 67, 68, 69. Produced some of the best music we've ever heard. So, you know, the recording and the engineers and the guys who were mixing and doing the stereo mixes on stuff really started to know what they were doing. Everything was hitting stride. So, yeah, they burned it up for that 3-year period. And even after that, I mean, there was some great stuff that came out, but still, those were important years. It was the end of the Beatles. It was the beginning of Led Zeppelin. It was the end of the Doors. It was the beginning of, the Steve Miller Band. You know, there were so many great things that were going on then that if we stopped to make note of every 50th anniversary of every album, that's all we would be doing for the next 3 years.
Unfortunately, you're absolutely correct. I mean, the other thing is people have mythologized, and this seems to be the theme, the recurring theme of this show. You know, certainly the years 67 and 68, in both very opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, 67 was the summer of love and the hippie year and everything was psychedelic and blah, blah, blah. And 68 was the year that everything got black and heavy.
Yep.
I mean, 68 was the year that this country turned to shit. You know, and I'm sorry, what's going on right now isn't even close when in comparison with what was going on back then.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, Chicago.
All these precious little pedals out there right now, try and put themselves out there like those people did in 68 in Chicago during the Democratic convention.
Right. Okay.
Under Mayor Daley, you know, seeing Dan Rather get the shit beaten out of him on the floor of the convention center.
Well, that was just a bonus.
That's true. But, well, by the way, should I mention Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy being killed?
Right. No? So, yeah, it was all coming to a crashing halt. And, I mean, you had – there was so much going on culturally. I mean, we could sit here and rehash 1968 for the next 4 hours. But, yeah, it started to make me wonder, again, the excuse to sell records, if 4 years down the road, we're going to have the 50th anniversary of Hallway Symphony by Hamilton, Joe Frank, and Reynolds. You know, ooh, 50 years ago. Who gives a shit?
Well, I'll tell you what. I fear next year, because God help us, we're not going to hear enough about Woodstock.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's all I have to say. But on the bright side, at least some of the stuff that came out in 68, Stax Records, in effect, was dead at the beginning of 1968.
Yep.
You know, Atlantic Records cruelly, and I would say in a great degree illegally, pulled the rug right out from underneath them and took all their masters, saying it belongs to us, not you, because they never had a written contract, but a handshake contract. And a handshake contract and the verbal word is as good of a contract as any. It is a legal and binding deal.
Yep.
It's also a gentleman's agreement. And Jerry Wexler pulled a very nasty little move on Jim Stewart of Stax Records. So Stax Records winds up completely barren at the beginning of 1968. Their biggest star, Otis Redding, dies in December of 1967 in a plane crash. Martin Luther King is killed in April in Memphis.
Right down the street from where they are. Yeah, right.
At the hotel where most of the musicians would all congregate so they could cool down in the heat. You know, they would go swimming at the Lorraine Motel. They'd eat fried chicken and ice cream according to Isaac Hayes and just hang out and relax and unwind. And then when the sun started to go down, they'd go back over to the Stax Studios and go back to work, you know. And yet somehow they managed to put it together. The first thing that was released on the new Stax Records, which was relaunched with a new logo, of course, the Snapping Fingers logo, you know, new serial numbers and a new distributor. The first thing they put out was Soul Limbo by Booker T and the MGs. So you tell me, you know, how things were going to go, because Stax in 1968 looked all but dead, and instead they came raging back hard and fast by putting out 29 albums in the span of 3 months so they could rebuild their catalog in effect. And much credit to them at the time, because they saved themselves and they brought along an incredible array of talent with them. So that's just kind of leading up to something that we'll talk about in a few weeks when it actually arrives and I have a chance to listen to it. And that is the new box set called Stax Memphis 68. But I wanted to bring that up because everybody talks about 1968, you know, and the whole – it went from being psychedelic and colorful and cutesy in the summer of 67, and all of a sudden people were just getting down and dirty in 1968. Hair was long. Beards were unkempt. People were, you know, the proverbial street fighting man style, if you will. There was nothing nice, genteel, lilting, creative, or – forward thinking in 1968, it was just revolution was the only word. That was the buzzword of the year. That was the byword, the byline, you know, fist in the air and, you know.
and as the biggest insult of all, what did we end up with in November of 1968? Nixon.
Richard Nixon. Well, now let me just say one thing. As your president, I did many great things for this nation. I created the EPA. I got us the pandas from China. I even had conversations with Brezhnev. But most importantly, I was on Laughing. To me?
Oh, God. That man was president when I was born. I will always have that stink on me.
Well, now, wait a second. You won't have Checkers or Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
No, not at this point. They're both in the ground. So, that said, you know, there was one thing we skipped over, though, in terms of our talk about the politics and the headlines of the week, because we now have another administration member who has said, I don't want to be here anymore. And
it was the one member of that administration who really did something of major value,
yes,
in my opinion.
Lots of things.
And that was Nikki Haley. Yeah, well, she – I will always have undying respect for her for the fact that she took no shit from the UN, and she went in there and told them what she thought of them and their treatment of Israel and wasn't having any of it. And God bless that woman for doing it.
Yeah, she did a great job, and she has always been. Again, this is one of those few times when, you know, any thinking person, and I know there's few of us all the time, regardless of party affiliation or lack of party affiliation, like in my case, you have to be able to look at her and go, you know what? She knows what the fuck she's doing. She gets it. She understands, and she understands the game. And she also understands how to win it. And that's the thing, you know, when she said, and I'm sure this was a condition of her, you know, getting to leave with her head intact. When she said, well, I'm not running for president in 2020. What that said to me is, yeah, you better believe I'm running for president in 2020.
Yes.
And I hope she does.
I hope so, too. And I wouldn't have a problem voting for her at all.
Nope.
I mean, listen, this is the woman who is the Republican governor of South Carolina who said, I want the Confederate flags taken down.
Right.
Period. Okay? That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. And you can just go down the list from there. But I thought she was magnificent. She was the only one who had the balls to go in there and tell those people at the UN to fuck right off. You're not going to treat Israel the way you have been, and you're certainly not going to get any support from the United States.
Yeah, right.
And she's great.
Right, and she is still by far, I mean, considering the fact that Donald Trump is 70 what, she's still got decades in front of her to build a political legacy, and it wouldn't surprise me to see her in the Oval Office at some point. And who, you know, again, going back 20 years, who would have thought we would say that about somebody who is Nikki Haley, who is not only a female Republican, but a female Republican of Indian descent and, you know,
a Southerner
and a Southerner, right, on top of everything else. So it's like, yeah, go ahead and attack her on any front. Good luck.
She'll tear your fucking head off.
Exactly.
She takes no shorts, and I appreciate that. But
right.
I respect her because, again, like you just said, it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. She knows how to play both sides of the game, and she knows how to play the game to win.
Right. And the thing is that she doesn't go in for idiocy. I'm not saying she hasn't done it, but I have never read an article where I looked at a quote from Nikki Haley and went, she said, what? Are you kidding me? Not once. You know, this week alone, Betsy DeVos, who I know. But there was an initiative to make it to give people who are accused of sexual assault on campus an easier path to defending themselves, which is fine. And I think that's actually necessary at this point, because as we've said, there are waves that come through, like the Me Too movement, that always have to have a wave back because people tend to go too far with things. So, you know, when you start taking always listen to the woman to the next level where you're saying always believe the woman, you're setting up a situation that could easily go very wrong. So it's fine what they were aiming to do. And then the mechanism of it, we can debate at some other time. But what she said about it was, well, right now it's really easy for a woman on campus to make an allegation of sexual assault. I'm not saying it should be difficult, but it shouldn't be easy. Shouldn't it be easy? I think it should be easy for a woman who was sexually assaulted to claim that she was sexually assaulted. I think that should be as easy as it can be. Betsy DeVos, here's an idea. Shut your stupid mouth.
And she's running education.
Yep.
More than that. Now, speaking of lack of education, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was my last, I'm going to take a major league dump right now on these assholes. You know, you've nominated Todd Rundgren. Whoop-de-fucking-do. I'm boycotting him, so good luck with that. The Zombies. Why aren't the Zombies in yet?
Yeah, it's been five times now.
Right? Hello, we're the fucking monkeys. Yeah, I know. Jan Wenner. Fuck you, Jan Wenner. Period. You know? The monkeys aren't in there.
Warren?
Big Star, Badfinger.
Uh-huh.
Who else? The New York Dolls?
Right. There are so many and influential bands. And yet, who was nominated this year? Radiohead. Really?
Don't get me started. Radiohead are, without a doubt, the biggest Emperor's New Clothes the band ever. And I'm as honest as the day is long. First of all, I disliked them when I heard that stupid I'm a Creep song. It's a stupid song. I never understood why people went so gaga over it. The Bends had some good songs on it, like many albums do. They have some good songs on
right.
it. OK Computer is an album that everybody lost their minds over. I don't get it, never got it. And the other thing is, how did they get tagged with being the new Pink Floyd? There's nothing Floydian about Radiohead.
No.
Please to explain.
I would love to. I can't, because it doesn't make any sense to me either.
They suck. Radiohead sucks. There's like, I can think of 50,000 bands in their wake that, no, then actually any band that sounds like them sucks. What am I saying?
Let's back up for just a second, though, because we did gloss over one, and I know we've got plenty of time to do this, but the one that didn't bother me, and I was surprised to see that there were people who were really resisting against it, was Stevie Nicks going in as a solo artist. I don't see that being against the grain at all.
Not at all. She's had fucking tons of hit records on her own.
Right.
End of story.
Right. But, you know,
that should be a question.
Because people were whining about, oh, she's already in there with Fleetwood Mac. Why does she need to go in again? And it's
because
like,
she sold a ton of records on her own. Fucking morons.
Exactly. Right.
Never heard Edge of 17?
Oh, and by the way, if Def Leppard goes in on their first ballot before the Zombies get in, I will go to that building myself and kick somebody's teeth in.
Oh, I was going to say you were going to burn it down because I would bring the wood and the gasoline.
I hate Def Leppard so much.
Bon Jovi's in there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Enough said. So Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if any of you out there are listening, go fuck yourselves collectively.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and I was actually going to use that for our In Our Head segment, so now I'll have to change up on the fly and come up with something absolutely brilliant for In Our Heads. But, you know, actually, this is something that we've tackled before, but something happened this week, and I thought, you know what, it's time to resurrect this again and start talking about one of my favorite subjects when it comes to music, and that, of course, is bands that never actually existed. Because we talked with a couple of guys who are, they wrote a book about Saturday morning cartoons. And you and I both grew up, Saturday morning from 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning all the way through noon was nothing but sitting there in front of the TV watching cartoons. And they changed pretty dramatically over time. But what we were talking about is, and I'm actually going to change this on the fly a little bit as well, was the fact that we got an education in four or five different areas because I was introduced to modern jazz by Bugs Bunny. I was introduced to opera by Bugs Bunny. I was introduced to classical music by all of the Looney Tunes cartoons. I was introduced to the divisions in rock and roll from things like bug music on the Flintstones and the Way Outs on the Flintstones.
Gonna go way out, way out. That's where the fun is, way out.
There were a couple of them, real bands, that actually made appearances on Scooby-Doo at one point or another. And
The Bo Brummelstones,
yes, thank you very much. And Let's talk a little bit about that and the music that was in those cartoons and the stuff. I know one of your favorites ever is I Love to Sing.
Oh, yeah. Owl Jolson.
Right.
And on the Jack Bunny Show.
So let's just riff a little bit on music and the stuff that came out of the cartoons that stuck with you, that whenever you hear the real music now, what you think about is the cartoon.
The cartoon, absolutely. I Love to Sing always makes me think right away. If I hear Owl Jolson. Well, if I hear Al Jolson music, I automatically think of the various characters that portrayed him, whether it was Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck or little Owl Jolson and I Love to Sing.
I love to sing. about the moon and the June and the springer. I love to sing about a sky of blue or a key for two, anything with a swing or two, and I love you. I love you.
Of course, my other absolute favorite from certainly from the cartoons is Daffy Duck doing Danny Kaye, doing Mickey Katz, singing Nothing Could Be Finer Than to Be in Carolina in the Morning, but doing it in the style of Mickey Katz and then Danny Kaye doing I, Romania.
If I had Aladdin's lamp for only a day, I'd make a wish and here's what I'd say. Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning. Move the bay, the big bad wolf in a suit's gay. Hip soup, sad little zoodle's head. Hip to oodle up to grandma's bed. Hip to see little zoodle's ears. Soot soot, sad little crepey ears. Hoop to tail little zoodle's head. Help to better to hear you with. Hey, hey, hoo hoo, how about that?
Says, you have to also understand, you know, my family's background, they were really into Yiddish comedy and theater, which is where these guys came from.
Right.
Which is where Mel Blanc came from. For those who don't know, Mel Blanc was a Jew, people.
Wow.
Why Porky Pig was the only kosher pig you're ever going to come across. Okay? And the wabbit and the duck and the fud and the putty tat and the chicken, all Jews.
Not Elmer Fudd. Not Elmer. Elmer Fudd was a different voice.
Well, no, until Mel Blanc took over. It was Arthur Q. Bryant originally. And then when he passed, Mel Blanc took over the voice of Fudd as well.
Gotcha.
So, and even, all right, here's a good one for you. Here's a real little side note. The later 1960s Warner Brothers cartoons, when Larry Storch started doing voices, like Cool Cat, he's also a Jew. So, yeah, Corporal Agarn's also a Jew.
Right.
Therefore, you know, all of those cartoon characters, you know, melded in with the whole Yiddish theater background. That's what I get from it, always will, you know, automatically think of. But, you know, of course, if I hear the Bo Brummels, the minute I hear Laugh Laugh, I see Fred Flintstone doing the Flintstone Frantic.
Yes.
That's, you know, if I hear or see Anne Margaret on TV,
Anne Margaret, you know,
I don't hear her singing Bye Bye Birdie. I hear her singing I Ain't Gonna Be a Fool No More.
Yep.
You know?
As Anne Margaret.
Exactly.
And, you know, I was talking about Scooby-Doo, the fact that there were bands and singers who, in the latter stages, when it was the Scooby-Doo Mysteries, that would come through there. Yeah, thank you. You got to it before I did. But, yeah, because I was thinking about Davy Jones.
Sunshine.
Yeah, right. And I was thinking about Davy Jones and his appearance on there. And there were a couple of other ones that were rock musicians. And then all of a sudden, right about the same time that he was in the Smokey and the Bandit movies, there he was on Scooby-Doo singing Pretty Mary Sunshine.
Pretty Mary Sunlight, she's all right with me. Pretty Mary Sunlight, she's everything I need. Pretty Mary Sunlight, she turns each night to day. Pretty Mary Sunlight, never go away.
And I love that song. I think that one's on my iPod, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, I mean, just seeing that in the cartoon was enough to make me go out to the record store and make a purchase.
Well, there's a couple of other elements, too, to the cartoons and the music thing. You know, there was the Alvin Show.
Yep.
Which I loved the Chipmunks, but they did an album called The Chipmunks Sing the Beatles.
And the Archies.
And, of course, the Archies, who were Kirshner's revenge on the Monkees.
Yep.
Who were really the Monkees in and of themselves, the concept of the Monkees, wasn't so much the whole Beatles thing, because initially when Rafelson and Schneider devised the series, they approached the Lovin' Spoonful point blank to get them to play the roles of these characters, because they were a real band and they were genuinely entertaining and they had this natural comedic charm and ability and so on. They just didn't want to, you know, be constricted to doing a TV series where, hang on a second, we write our own material or we pick the songs that we want to play. We don't want you bringing in songs that we would have to do that are Screen Gems contracted songs, which is why they didn't go ahead with it.
Right.
But there's also, you know, you've got things like,
I'm going to give you one that's going to make you laugh. The three little bops.
The three little bops, I immediately thought of when you said, we're introduced to modern jazz.
Yep, that was it.
You know, Stan Freberg doing the narration. You know, I think of that one as a truly educational cartoon, to be honest with you.
Definitely.
You know, it's swing jazz, modern jazz, I should say. It's a little bit of the beatnik hipster thing, you know, hipster in the proper connotation of the word. You know, the way it's delivered is in a very Lord Buckley-esque kind of way.
And it's also, right, and it's a melding of the Three Little Pigs story with Faust. I mean, come on.
Three little pigs were in the groove. Everything was running smooth. The pigs were due for a big surprise, for the wolf appeared with red-rimmed eyes.
Ooh, you cool. Ooh, you cool. Ooh, you cool, man. Cool.
Well, to show he was friendly, he shook their hand, announced he was joining up with a band. Instead of starting an argument, one and a two, and away they went.
But the fact is, of course, the wolf joins in the band.
Right. You know? Yes, after he ends up in hell. So, yeah, it's so much fun. But that was the thing, is that the music really made those what they were. And even the incidental music that was in the cartoons. I mean, the little string plucks when Sylvester the Cat's trying to sneak somewhere. It's things like that. Those were orchestrated.
Well, it's like there are times when I watch my cats playing, right?
And you can hear it, can't you?
No, what I hear is do 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 do. You know, the goofy stuff that you would always hear, the goofy incidental music in the
right.
You know, in the cartoons, that's what the staying power of those cartoons is. But your point is so much deeper and greater than that. I don't think, unfortunately, unless you're listening to the show and you're of our age range, you can understand the meaning of it and the longevity that here we are, you in your 40s, me in my 50s, talking with great clarity and complete memory of what the songs, the visuals, the stories, and the interconnections and the intertwining of all these different cartoons and songs and the music. I'll give you another one. We were also introduced to transvesticism and calypso music by way of both Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny, both doing Carmen Miranda.
Yep.
Okay. What else? Certainly ethnic music. I mean, they did a lot of the Yiddish and Russian thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how much Zoot Suit stuff was there in Bugs Bunny?
A lot of Zoot Suits, because a lot of those cartoons were from the mid-40s. I'm pretty sure we heard some of the Cab of Calloway mixed in there, you know, cartoon-wise, musically.
Oh, I'm almost positive, yeah.
Jesus, I mean, we were also introduced to, you know, people who were larger-than-life characters of that modern era in the cartoons, like Jack Benny, everybody on the Jack Benny Show. Because I don't know if you remember, they actually did a cartoon version of Jack Benny as a mouse.
Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
And it was everybody who was on the Jack Benny Show giving their voices. And of course, as we all know, Mel Blanc was the voice of the Maxwell, the car that Jack Benny ran into the ground, really. But you had Jack Benny, his wife, Mary, doing their voices. What was his name? I think his name was Don Wilson, was the MC of the show. Dennis Day was the show's singer. And, of course, Rochester, Eddie Rochester Anderson. Yes, Mr. Benny? Chauffeur and foil. And they're trying to get into the cheese vault, but they have to get around the cat. And at the very end, Jack Benny himself is in the cartoon. Like, you see him in black and white film. And he's sitting there like, oh, what a horrible dream that was. Mary, you wouldn't believe this. I dreamt I was a mouse. And he looks across the floor, and there's the two little mice of him and Mary running underneath the carpet.
Yes.
You know, we were introduced to people like Jimmy Durante and Eddie Cantor and Bing Crosby and everybody – who was anybody in that period of time?
Right. And even if they didn't show up as voice actors, they would be referenced in the cartoons. I mean, Peter Lorre was referenced in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, and so was Humphrey Bogart. You know the one I'm talking about.
I guess baby's just going to have a ham sandwich.
So, yeah, it was all there. And see, that's what made those things magic. And unfortunately, that creativity, it has gone out of the cartoon world and gone somewhere else. I don't know where it is, but those geniuses have to be out there somewhere.
Well, you're not allowed to make fun of anybody. Not, you know, there's no you can't mock or spoof or anything anymore.
Yeah.
Look, some school just banned To Kill a Mockingbird, for Christ's sakes.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what does that say about the society we're living in?
Right. Right. And again, I could do a riff of an hour on all of that stuff.
Exactly.
But the schools that tried to take all of the N words out of Huckleberry Finn. Yeah, that's what we want to do. We want to make slavery look a little less bad.
You know, somebody brought up the point that, you know, the Confederate flags, for good, bad, or indifferent, are part of our history. You can't erase history. You can't. You know, but people have managed to do that. And in a lot of ways, our history has been erased, our youth, because you will never see the cartoons the way we saw them in full. They're all edited and watered down to a point of you look at it and you go, wait a minute. This is missing and this is missing and this is missing and this is not watchable now.
Right. Yeah, exactly, because somebody thought it was a little too much for little kids.
Well, right, we were, you know, we actually, that's how we developed our senses of humor and our, you know, we get it. Even, like I said, here we are in our 40s and 50s, and we're able to talk about it with complete memory, you know?
Right, and that says a lot about the staying power of all of that stuff. Well, again, I knew you would have great answers, man, no matter where we went with it, and we'll do it all again next time around. In the meantime, Rob, it's going to be a little while before you and I talk again, because I'm off on vacation for a week, so we'll get back together a week from now, and we'll do this thing all again.
Of course we will. In the meantime, have a wonderful vacation, safe travels, and to all our listeners, as usual, thank you. We appreciate it. Keep the cards and letters coming. And to everybody else, like I said, we'll find you. You better start tuning in, folks. We'll see y'all later.